Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. This is Dr. Toni, and I'm with Dr. Lisa today, and today we're talking about sugar. And why are we talking about sugar? We'll talk a little bit about our experience with sugar because, you know, both Lisa and I haven't always had the kind of education and nutritional practices that we do now. We used to... like a lot of people eat a lot of sugar. And I think it's really important for us to really get a sense of like how a lot of us and have our relationship with sugar compared to what it used to be. We can kind of take this American statistic and I think it's definitely relevant to us in Canada and maybe other countries around the world. But the average American intake of fructose, which is a type of sugar that we'll talk about, back in like the late 1800s, early 1900s was 15 grams a day. Now, the intake of sugar is more like 55 grams a day for adults, and it can even go up to like 73 grams a day for teenagers and adolescents. Back in the day, type 2 diabetes used to be called adult onset diabetes. They actually had to change the name because more and more kids were developing diabetes that wasn't type 1 or type or juvenile diabetes. And what's really important when it comes to sugar is, when we look at health and we look at a whole bunch of things, weight, our hormones, it isn't necessarily just like a calorie is a calorie. You know, when we're talking about, you know, our food, and they've done studies in numerous countries around the world, looking at a correlation of calories, sugar, and diabetes, scientists found that adding 150 calories a day to the diet barely raised the risk of diabetes overall. But if those 150 calories came from soda, which has a lot of sugar in it, the risk of diabetes went up by 700%. That's huge. So we really need to look at sugar and the content of our food and how much sugar is in it. Like I said, Lisa, this wasn't necessarily something that we were concerned about when we were growing up.
True. Yeah. And it's interesting because, yeah, of those 15 grams that people were getting in the late 1800s, early 1900s, it was mostly from fruit and vegetables. But now sugar, yeah, we think, okay, we're not just talking about, you know, candy bars and gummies and candy and sugary drinks, but we're talking about hidden sources of sugar where people don't even know they're eating it. Like, we'll get into those. But, you know, it's added into bread. Like in Ireland, they just declared that the Subway sandwich bread can't be considered bread because the amount of sugar. It's not a ridiculous amount, but it's more than they allow for something to be called bread. We're looking at sugar in salsa, salad dressing, some things that you consider to be healthy, and these all really add up. And, you know, no wonder we have an increase, unfortunately, in diabetes, obesity in kids. It's now no longer adult onset diabetes. It's just getting worse and worse. And a lot of it started with going to the low-fat craze. So I can talk a little bit about my experience of, you know, sugar and relationship with sugar. And then I'd love to hear yours, Toni.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I guess like I was always known as a having a sweet tooth, but I don't think it was excessive because, you know, at home we had a fairly healthy diet. Like we got cereal, but it was always the boring cereals, right? Like Cheerios or Bran Flakes. If we were lucky, we got, you know, with raisins, that sort of a thing. But it wasn't a ton of sugar for breakfast. And our snacks were pretty much whole food snacks like cheese and crackers. Sometimes we got those like leather fruit snacks that were just dehydrated fruit, but mostly pieces of fruit, maybe some juice as well. We were allowed sugar, you know, we'd have some desserts and cookies after dinner, but it wasn't a huge amount. And when we had friends over, a party or a babysitter, we might get some more, you know, pop or ice cream. So we were allowed to consume sugar, but it wasn't always there. But I do have memories, my mom might kill me for bringing this up, but if we go shopping at the mall with my mom would buy, you know, Jube Jubes and licorice, and we'd eat them on the car ride home, and she'd say, "Don't tell your father." So I guess she might have had a little bit of a sugar addiction, which I don't think she does now. But so you could see that kind of play of this is bad, let's hide it, let's not tell anyone about it. So growing up, I had, you know, good energy levels, good health, and a good diet. But when I got to university and it was carte blanche, like, you know, you're at the caf at school, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get chocolate milk and I'm going to get a muffin for breakfast or a chocolate chip bagel. I was addicted to Tim Hortons. They had those all over campus. So I would get a double-double or triple-triple coffee, which I can't even imagine having because now I have decaf coffee, but I love it black. So my sugar cravings and addiction was really high at that point. I needed it to keep me going. And then let alone don't talk about, you know, the alcohol consumption in university, which is a form of sugar as well. Not everybody realizes that, but that can definitely contribute to diabetes and fatty liver and all of those horrible things we'll talk about. So that was my university experience. I think things really shifted for me in terms of my sugar intake when I went and lived in Korea for a year. So I taught English there. And it was just amazing the difference in what they ate. Of course, it's westernized, so you could get your Dunkin' Donuts for breakfast, your Starbucks and, you know, McDonald's if you wanted. But the standard Korean breakfast included rice, kimchi, maybe you'd have fish for breakfast. You know, at the 7-Eleven where you could get standard American snacks or Canadian snacks, if you will, you know, sugary things or chips, they also had hard-boiled eggs. They had these like sushi triangles that might have had a bit of tuna in them and they were wrapped in seaweed. You could buy hard-boiled sweet potatoes. So it was actually real whole food that people were snacking on. I was a teacher there and a lot of the teachers brought snacks from home and they commonly ate a hard-boiled sweet potato and a hard-boiled egg, or not hard-boiled sweet potato, but you know what I mean. So it was real whole food. And, you know, with the westernization, of course, that started to impact the health in Asia as well. But that was really eye-opening. So I really reduced my sugar intake, my processed food intake, and wrapped my brain around not needing something sweet for a snack or something sweet for breakfast. So that being said, I still enjoy some forms of sugar, although I definitely am not like a sweet sugar craving person anymore. I'm more of a salty, crunchy craving person, but I love to have a little bit of 80% chocolate or even higher every day, a little bit of that. Sometimes I'll go through phases where I might put what's called Lakanto sweetener. It has monk fruit and a little bit of erythritol. I might put it in my, you know, rooibos chai tea, for example, but I usually just drink it plain, but sometimes I'll want it a little bit sweeter. But I guess my real weakness is for those smart sweets. I think I've talked about those before. And this, they don't have standard, you know, added sugars. They get the sugar from tapioca fiber, which is a prebiotic, as well as like chicory, inulin, and they might put a bit of stevia in there. So it doesn't raise your blood sugar levels, but it has that sweet taste. So if those are in the house, watch out, Stuart. Sorry, you're not going to get it. Devour them all. So you can see, you know, once I start to even have some of these healthier forms in quotes of sugar, my cravings start to increase. So I'm actually, I think, day 14 now on my sugar-free reset challenge, which we'll let you know about at the end of this podcast that you can get on the wait list for. But my cravings for even those natural sweeteners have gone down. And, you know, you really start to appreciate the sweetness of fruit. So that's been kind of my journey. I'm definitely more of a salty, crunchy craving type person. But how about you, Tony? How's your relationship with sugar been?
You know, my experience growing up is pretty similar to yours. I mean, my mom really had a lot of great whole foods, a lot of homemade foods at home, really worked to minimize kind of the junky food and, you know, sweet cereals and that kind of thing, really similar to your mom. But again, we did have some. But I really really showed signs of having a sweet tooth, almost like classic sugar addict behavior, really starting early. One of the like classic stories in my family is, and I don't remember this at all, so I must have been really young, maybe 4 or 5, when there was this story when we were at my grandma's house for Easter, and my grandma was asked my mom, "What's wrong with Tony?" Because by noon, I was just like running around and bouncing off the walls, almost literally. And they looked, and it turned out I ate all of my Easter chocolates before noon. Okay. So I was just like revved up and going. And I even remember like being young and being really frustrated that my brother could totally ration out his Halloween and Easter candy. And so he always had some leftover, whereas I always ate mine really, you know, pretty quickly, even if I tried to like not eat a lot at once. And, you know, as I grew up more and more, especially after school, I'd kind of sneak in secret, like eating like chocolate chips and mini marshmallows and even iced tea mix, like after school, like what, you know, anything kind of sweet is what I went for. And I really tried to hide this behavior from my family too. And it got even to the point when I was in university and kind of going out with my friends. You know, we would go out to a restaurant or go out to a bar. I would actually take the raw sugar packets at restaurants and just eat it straight, just to like gain some energy. And I was going for the raw sugar, so I thought it was like a healthier option. I didn't think it was too crazy, but again, it was crazy enough for my friends to remind me, especially once I started in naturopathic medicine too. So,
well, I guess that's better than those like dip and dicks, where you like the stick and dip it into the powdered sugar that was like artificially colored and flavored. So you were just getting straight to the source.
Yeah, right. More natural. Avoiding those like extra artificial colors and that kind of thing. Sure, great. But I was still getting a ton of sugar. And even now, like definitely sugar for me is really still an issue. When after I had Frankie, and especially, you know, when I was looking at you know, losing some of that that baby weight and getting back to a, you know, pre-pregnancy weight so I could fit into my clothes, the really big thing that I had to look at was my sugar intake and really reducing, you know, those kind of like sweet junky foods. It's still, you know, something that I will kind of lean towards. And even like you said, Lisa, you know, that craving and that sweet tooth is something that I still have. And if I'm not careful with what I'm taking in, it can easily sneak in.
Mm-hmm. What's your strategy right now then, Tony, with Halloween, you know, less than a week away, and chocolates and candy, you know, abundantly available?
Typically, you know, my big strategy is, you know, if it's not in the house, I don't eat it. Because for me, if it's in the house and I know where it is, I will eat it. And thankfully, my partner, Davin, you know, he has a bit of a sweet tooth as well. He'll go and buy stuff. And most of the time he won't tell me, and he'll put it somewhere where I don't typically look. And I've even gotten to the point where I've just decided for myself, I'm not going to go out and look for it. Because I really like, you know, like keeping myself in the dark, you know, if I don't see it, it's not there kind of thing. So
yeah, that's a great strategy. Yeah. Just out of sight, out of mind. I think that works for a lot of people. And then other people though might say, okay, if I allow myself to have, you know, 2 of the small candy bars a few times a week, they're able to ration, but a lot of people, they can't, right? So it's like, just don't buy it. Or if your partner buys it, get them to hide it. So we'll talk about some strategies to help with those sugar cravings, things things you can do instead or things you can do to reduce the cravings, because being, you know, almost Halloween and all of these treats most likely in your house, it can become a problem. You know, you might hide them from your kids, but then you might actually eat them all. I've seen that happen many times. So they're like worried the kids are going to eat it. They don't tell the kids, but then they eat them all themselves. So
We'll
get into some strategies there. But let's break down, like, what is actually sugar? So we can talk about naturally occurring sugar, which doesn't have the same bad rap as these added sugars that are added to food. So anything with a label has the potential to have added sugars. So we want to be reading the label. But naturally occurring sugar can be found in fruits, in vegetables, in milk, and even in almonds. So, and this sugar doesn't have the same effect in your body typically than added sugars in processed foods, because if it's packaged in a fruit, for example, yes, you have some fructose, some sugar in there, but you also have fiber, vitamins, and minerals. The fiber helps to slow the release of the sugar into your bloodstream, so you can get more of a sustained level of energy. Some fruits are higher than in sugar than others and can raise your blood sugar levels more quickly. But, you know, the ultimate goal is to have, you know, a fruit maybe paired with a bit of almonds. You want something with fiber, healthy protein, healthy fat to stabilize that blood sugar release. But when you're looking at packaged foods, so a lot of times the ingredients, even if seemingly healthy, like the different grains or oatmeals, can be highly processed and refined. So even like, you know, those packages of oatmeal where you just add hot water, there can be a ton of sugar in there, and you think you're doing yourself good because at least there's oatmeal, but the fibrous component has been broken down so that the sugar in there is going to raise your blood sugars a lot more quickly, contribute to diabetes, weight gain. You know, you're going to crash later and be hungry within an hour or two after breakfast. So it's these added sugars that can have really negative effects. So it can be in things like cereal, pop, baked goods, but it also can be hidden, like I mentioned, in salad dressing, salsa, tomato sauce, bread. It can be pretty shocking once you start to look at labels. Even some types of chips have sugar, roasted nuts might have it as well. So that can be pretty alarming.
For sure. And another piece to really kind of look at, like you mentioned, Lisa, with naturally occurring sugars in food, like fruit, it'll have a lot of the vitamins and minerals that your body needs to process that sugar. But when you're eating, you know, processed foods, especially like highly processed foods that have a lot of added sugar in it, they don't typically have the nutrients that's needed to really process that fruit properly. So you're getting it, it's kind of stealing it from, you know, your stores and what you already have, so that you're kind of becoming depleted in those nutrients as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's like dirty fuel, right? You're not putting the right gas in your gas tank. It's going to affect the car, the performance over the long term, if it doesn't have these other nutrients that you need to process those naturally occurring sugars. That's a really good way to put it, Tony.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what is sugar? There's so many different types of sugar. Basically, anything that ends with an O-S-E is a sugar, like sucrose, fructose, glucose, even lactose in dairy. That's all a type of sugar. And then there's a whole bunch of other types of sugars that you'd want to look for on your ingredients list, on your label of your food. But also, again, honey, maple syrup, brown rice syrup, agave nectar, even evaporated cane juice is a type of sugar. And you really want to watch for all of those. Plus also, again, even looking for, you know, concentrated juices that are added to foods, have a high sugar content. You'll want to also look for, you know, any, again, artificial sweeteners. That's a whole other topic that we'll definitely have to talk about in another podcast. A lot of people are also concerned about high fructose corn syrup. High fructose corn syrup is in Canada labeled as glucose-fructose in the ingredient list. So especially if you look on a can of regular pop, like Coke or even, you know, cookies or that kind of thing. And if you're looking for high fructose corn syrup, you won't see it on the label written that way. It is actually called glucose-fructose. So it's still in those foods. And that is, again, really a highly concentrated sugar that can have, again, a number of the impacts on our body that regular sugar does have too. Again, increasing the blood sugar, creating more of an insulin resistance and risk for diabetes. It can also impact your immune system. This year, more than ever, we really want to support our immune system and not do things to negatively impact it. Where we know that sugar can really decrease certain kinds of our immune function, and recent research is really looking at how that sugar and reducing the amount of sugar is even more important when you're fighting off a bacterial infection, like a urinary tract infection or strep throat or something like that.
Or candida.
Or candida. Absolutely. Right. Of course, sugars are associated with diabetes, obesity, also heart disease and liver disease as well. The liver can actually convert fructose into triglycerides, and that really builds up and damages our liver cells. And so that's a key piece. We also, when we're talking about our immune system and sugar, we also have to be aware of how sugar can often drive the cancerous process. There's a insulin-like growth factor can be carcinogenic, and that's where even the latest research is really looking at more low sugar ketogenic diets for cancer treatment as well.
Mm-hmm. No, really good. Sharing all the negative effects that it can have in the body, definitely. So not only can it impact your risk of diabetes, but you're more likely to get sick. You're more likely to have chronic diseases and fructose. Yeah, so we're talking about high fructose corn syrup, but you can get too much fructose from fruit juice. That's pretty common for a lot of people too, right? So if you're getting it from fruit, you're probably going to be okay, unless you're eating 20 servings of fruit a day and nothing else. That could be an issue, but juice can be a big contributor of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, diabetes, obesity. So eat the whole fruit instead of having the juice, even if it's orange. It's kind of, people think, okay, I'm starting my day off with orange juice, I'm being really healthy, but you can get a lot of fructose and sugar from there. And Tonia, you pointed out that added sugars can, even come from honey, from maple syrup. It's not just sucrose, which is like table sugar, which can be derived from beet or cane sugar. So these are all added. Even honey and maple syrup, we wouldn't consider as, the natural sugar from fruit, right? Because you're adding it actually to food. So that can impact your risk of these conditions. Granted, they have different effects on your blood sugar. They might have some added nutrients to them, but we'll get into that in another episode. But ultimately, it's still converted to sugar and has these negative effects. And then we really want to, first of all, ideally, we're not getting food in a package, right? That's impossible. But anything that's in a package has been altered, adulterated in some way. Ideally, we're shopping the perimeter of the grocery store and it's just one ingredient, if you will. But we really need to learn how to read nutrition labels. So first you look at the serving size, right? So is a serving size half of a chocolate bar, a whole chocolate bar? Sometimes they'll trick you because it's like half the chocolate bar, but you're going to eat the whole thing. So you're going to have to double those grams of sugar and carbohydrates and everything else by two. So really pay attention to that. And then you want to look at, I usually start off by looking at the protein and the fat to see how many grams are there. So ideally, there's some protein and some fat, not just carbohydrates and sugar. Ideally, it's healthy sources of fat, not like some of the vegetable oils that can be inflammatory, for example, but see if there's some protein and fat in there. And then you look at the carbohydrate level, that'll list the amount of sugar and fiber in there added up. And you're going to want to subtract the amount of sugar from the carbohydrate carbohydrates. So that gets your net carbohydrates, subtract the amount of fiber from your carbohydrates, and that gives you the net carbohydrates, which is, you know, a good number to know, because the fiber is really going to help you with regularity. It's going to help to balance your blood sugar levels. What's left over after you subtract that fiber amount can have more harmful effects in the body. But definitely look at the amount of sugar too. You may see sugar alcohols is another list on a label. So that doesn't raise your blood sugar, but some people, the sugar alcohols can cause some gas, bloating, may aggravate irritable bowel syndrome. So pay attention to that. Something might taste sweet, but it doesn't have sugar, if you will, in it, but it might have these sugar alcohols.
For sure. And that's important to not only look at, you know, how much carbohydrates is in there. And it's typically, you know, listed in a gram form, in a gram amount. And then also looking at the ingredients list and seeing, okay, what is actually in there? How many different types of sugars are in there, if anything, or is it just, again, whole food, no added sugar? And so then the carbohydrates that are on the label is just, again, naturally occurring in that food. So especially when you're looking at picking out something like a salsa, and this is something that I've always done. And I will never forget one time I was in the grocery store years and years ago, even before I became a naturopathic doctor. And I was looking at all of the different types of salsa, and I was kind of looking at all of the labels. And there was a gentleman who came up beside me and he said, "Oh, just get the no-name brand. You know, it's all the same. It's cheaper." I looked at the no-name brand and it actually listed sugar added in the ingredients list, whereas another brand that was a little bit more expensive didn't have any added sugar in it. So I told him, "Well, no, they're not the same. I'm getting the one without the sugar." So you really do have to look at those ingredients lists, because, I mean, so often I hear, "Oh, just everything has sugar in it." No, not necessarily. If you look and if you kind of pay attention, you can find brands that don't have that added sugar, and it may be a little bit more expensive because sugar is cheap, and that is a way to kind of keep the cost down for different food companies.
Yeah, and I know some people can feel overwhelmed, like after they do our 5-day sugar detox, or when they're doing it, they're like, "Oh my gosh, yeah, everything has sugar in it." So it's good to just prioritize and say, okay, this week when I go shopping, I'm going to look at the options for salsa, if that's what you buy every week, and I'm going to pick the one that doesn't have sugar. Okay, next week, I'm going to look at the breads that I'm buying and make sure it doesn't have too much sugar. So you can break it down that way. And yeah, really important to see the different types listed on the label. And even is sugar, or some form of sugar, one of the top 3 to 5 ingredients, you probably going to want to throw that one away or just not buy that. So that's a quick and easy way. If you're in a hurry, just look, okay, are the first 3 to 5 ingredients any form of sugar, including, you know, cane syrup and maple sugar, maple syrup and honey and all of that. So that's like kind of a quick and easy. And then one area where people don't really think about their sugar consumption, although they probably know it's sweet, but they don't know how much they're getting, is from drinks, right? And right now it's fall season. Everybody's getting their pumpkin spice lattes and, you know, all these syrups in their coffees and takeout. So really look at the nutritional information for these different coffee shops, even, you know, McDonald's. What are you actually getting and how can you modify that? And people, you know, do add sugar, maple syrup, honey to their coffee or tea. So looking at, okay, can I start to reduce it a little bit, get my taste buds adjusted to a lower amount? Because all of those add up on a daily basis. So really be conscious about that.
Absolutely. And I'd hate to, you know, just single out one company over another, but we might, you know, choose a very popular brand of a, you know, pumpkin spice latte and link to the nutrition facts so that you can go into the show notes and easily, quickly see how much sugar you're getting from that drink.
That's a great idea. I think we all know what we're talking about, but, and then just to give you a sense of amounts of sugar in, you know, breakfast cereals or things that you're eating. So we mentioned, you know, well, we should talk first, I guess, about how much sugar is too much, and then we'll get the amounts from different foods. You can kind of do, you know, a quick tally to see what's going on. So Tony, did you want to talk about the World Health stat? Because you found that, and I'll talk about the American Heart Association.
For sure. You know, because when I've always looked at, okay, really, how much sugar is healthy? I've always gone to the World Health Organization. You know, they're often pretty apolitical, and again, a global recommendation. So they've said that a healthy diet includes less than 10% of your total energy intake from free sugar, which is equivalent to 50 grams if you're consuming 2,000 calories a day. But they've also said, ideally, less than 5% of your total energy intake should be from sugar for additional health benefits. So I've always just gone to, let's get those additional health benefits. Let's look at what 5% of your total energy intake is. And if you are taking in about 2,000 calories a day, 5% is 100 calories. That equals 25 grams, which is about 6 teaspoons of sugar. So I've just saved you a whole lot of math by
that's complicated, but you don't want to get more than 6 teaspoons. And 1 teaspoon is 4 grams of sugar. So that's where the, 6 teaspoons equals approximately 25 grams of sugar. So 1 teaspoon of sugar equals 1 teaspoon equals 4 grams of sugar. So it's a good conversion to know. And the American Heart Association recommends that men get no more than 9 teaspoons of sugar. So that would be 36 grams. So that's still on the high end, higher than that 25 grams for being conservative with the World Health Organization number. And they also recommend that women get no more than 6 teaspoons a day. So that's on par with what the World Health Organization is saying. I don't think, men can necessarily get away with more sugar. So it's interesting, it's different there. And even then, why not aim for less, right? Why? And this is added sugar. So looking at just getting your natural sources of sugar from fruit, vegetables, maybe some nuts and seeds, etc. So it's important to know your numbers. And then what kind of foods, what kind of amounts of sugar do they have? So a really popular granola bar, I think everybody, most people come into my clinic or into my virtual visit, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm having granola bar every day for breakfast. And, even like what people consider as healthy, I think, because the name, it's called Nature's Path. Things can be misleading by names. You know, even if it says organic and gluten-free, it doesn't mean it's going to be healthy. You still have to read the label. But the Nature's Path granola bar has 2.75 teaspoons of sugar. And if you pair that with an Activia yogurt, the typical serving size, that's an extra 3.25 teaspoons. So there you go. You're already at your 6 teaspoons a day of added sugar from just from your breakfast, right? So it's pretty shocking. Granted, some might come from, actually in yogurt, there's not much lactose, but that's pretty shocking. So don't even, you're not even adding in what you're adding to your coffee. If you're having anything, what you would consider sweet or a treat, like a chocolate bar, which could have up to 6 teaspoons.
Absolutely. And so if you look at how all of that sugar adds up, and if you're going over that 5%, if you're going over your 6 teaspoons of sugar, is it contributing not only to, again, those kind of major illnesses that we think of when it comes to sugar, like diabetes, heart disease, obesity, fatty liver, but is it also contributing to inflammation in your body? Is it contributing to hormonal imbalances such as PCOS? Is it contributing to blood pressure issues, acne issues, mood swings, anxiety, impacts on brain health, dementia? Alzheimer's is being called kind of the type 3 diabetes of the brain. And also something that I think all of us are kind of concerned about, early aging, again, coming from that inflammatory process that, again, can be impacted and promoted by increased sugar intake.
I know the effects are, like, it affects your whole body, right? From your head to your toes, even, with diabetes, and if you have blood flow issues, to your feet, to your kidneys. So it definitely has wide-ranging effects outside of diabetes. So it's like, why do we have naturally occurring sugar, right? Like, why do we have fruit and berries? Well, it was there when, our ancestors were out hunting or moving around in tribes, and they needed a quick source of energy. energy, but it wasn't there all the time. They would eat it, they would use the energy and, you know, use that energy to kill an animal so they could eat the animal, and then they would rest and recover. And even like the sweet taste, like babies love sweet because it shows them, you know, that there is energy and calories for them. And breast milk is sweet. Sometimes it can show species that certain things are safe to eat, whereas bitter can be more like, oh, this might be a poison or it's bad for me. So there's some evolutionary things we need to think about around sugar, but we don't need it all the time, and we have it in an abundance. And the more we eat, the more we want. And I think people can agree with that, where, you know, you just keep wanting more and more. Okay, I can get away with one square of dark chocolate. Okay, maybe in a week I need to have two now. So you really want to be aware. There are some revolutionary aspects to having these sources of sugar, but they were from, you know, fruit sources and root vegetables, maybe a bit from nuts or from your mother's milk, but we've just taken sugar to a whole new level and processed things so much.
For sure. Our brains are wired for sugar. Our brains haven't changed, although our culture has changed. The food we eat, the foods that we have in our refrigerators, the fact that we have refrigerators and pantries, that's completely changed from, you know, way back. We're not necessarily depending on sugar in order to survive as we used to. And so it's really important for us to really kind of hack into that evolutionary instinct and drive towards sugar and really look at the reasons why we're reaching for sugar. And those can also include, you know, the reasons why even we reach for alcohol, because like you mentioned, Lisa, you know, alcohol does definitely have some of the same impacts as sugar too.
Mm-hmm. I know, I was pretty shocked. Like I no longer have beer. If I have beer, it's gluten-free and it's lower in sugar, but I was moving to more ciders and it blew my mind how much sugar could be in a cider. It could be up to like 65 grams of sugar in a cider. So the one I get is 4 grams. So it's almost like a dry wine. But if you're drinking one, you know, tall can of that, oh my gosh, you're like, you know, 3 or 4 times above what you should be getting on a daily basis. And a lot of people don't just have one. So don't discount the effects of sugar or the levels of sugar that you're drinking too.
So you're going to have to link to the brand of cider that has only 4 grams,
Lisa.
We're
going to get in big trouble here, Tony. We're going to have some lobbyists out hunting us down. I'm getting kind of nervous.
I wouldn't worry about it. And this is just because I'm a cider fan. I'm not a beer fan. Again, you have to look at, you know, the sugars that way. So it's one of those things of looking at, okay, in your day-to-day routine, which again may be completely different pandemic-wise. Again, we're around home often, more often than we normally would be. You know, when are you reaching out for those kind of foods that have sugar in them or alcohol? Is it just kind of a routine thing? Is it automatic? Is it even for boredom? It's really kind of looking at, okay, you know, in your day-to-day, what are you having and when are you having it?
Mm-hmm. That's really important. I see so many people, so they start the day off and they're having, you know, a small breakfast, maybe 1 or 2 hard-boiled eggs, or maybe they don't have breakfast. And then for lunch, they just have, you know, a salad, maybe with some fish in there. Dinner, they try to have a well-rounded meal. But then, you know, after dinner, when they're watching TV, when the kids are down, they're like, I can't stop eating, you know, cereal and chocolate bars and yogurt, and they're just binging. So it's looking at, okay, have you gotten enough healthy foods earlier in the day, because when you have that food in front of you, then you're going to have this ravenous hunger. Your body's like, I have this food here. I've got to eat all this because I've been depriving myself the rest of the day. So that can be part of it too. So really having healthy, balanced meals 2 or 3 times a day. Some people are moving to 1 meal a day. That would be a whole other topic, but you want to get a good balanced meal if you're eating. And as you said, yeah, is it just automatic? Okay, once the kids go down, I pull out the chips, I pull out the chocolate bars, this is my, this is what I do? Or is it a reward for, oh, I made it through another day, I'm going to have my glass of wine and some chocolate, or I've had, you know, a really good day and this is my reward or treat. We always use that word treat, right? And I really try not to use that with Stuart. It's so hard because it's so ingrained in us. I try to call it, you know, a dessert, or first you eat your meal, then you can have a cookie if he gets one that day. So trying to figure out if it's automatic or routine, how can you break that routine? Okay, does it mean I'm going to have a cup of tea instead of eating something, or I'm just going to serve out a certain portion size and not go back to the kitchen? And if it's a reward, does it have to be food as a reward? Can it be, I'm going to do a short yoga class online, I'm going to read some of my favorite book, or have, you know, a certain amount that you're going to consume and actually enjoy it, right? So like, do I feel like the wine tonight? Okay, I do. I'm going to pour up half a glass and I'm really going to sip it and savor it and really try to enjoy it that way and see if it's enough. But one strategy too that can work, let's say you're craving sugar or alcohol, you can set a timer for 5 to 10 minutes and, you know, do something you like for that time and then see, okay, is the craving still there? Do I still need it? So it just gives you a little bit of space and time to step back.
And that's a great thing to do, to really, again, get you out of that automatic response, but just like stop and think and slow down. Another reason why a lot of people reach out for sugar is for energy. You may find that, you know, around the afternoon or evening, your energy is crashing. And so, you know, in terms of reaching out for something sugary, yeah, you're going to get that boost in blood sugar. You're going to get that boost in energy. But, I like to ask the question, why is your energy crashing? You know, it's really, important to kind of look at, you know, what's going on behind that, that need to reach for the sugar that way. And that's a lot of what we work with our patients, Lisa, in terms of, you know, when people come to see us as naturopathic doctors and have energy issues, you know, we can really look at what's going on behind that. And you can, we may even link to our episode on fatigue so that you can kind of look at some strategies and some reasons why you may be reaching out for the sugar for energy, and really looking at the root cause of that instead of just continuing to use sugar as an energy boost.
Mm-hmm. I think that's important. Yeah, as busy moms, you know, you might be working or staying at home with the kids, you can just crash in the afternoon, right? So that's mm-hmm. a typical time too when people could reach for more caffeine or sugary treats. So it's like, what can I do, you know, to help me? What's causing this fatigue? Is it, can I get more sleep? Is it possible? Do I need help getting a better quality sleep? What can I do to help with adrenal health, for example? And then, okay, what's a healthier option to give me some energy, but it's not going to pump up my blood sugars and then I'm going to crash even more later. So it might be, I love, you know, if people are craving something sweet, you know, cutting up an apple or a pear, maybe spreading some nut butter on there or seed butter, you know, hazelnut butter tastes so sweet. It's so good. Mm, almond so butter can taste sweet. I know you had a bit of a love and then hate relationship with almond butter, but
I love almond butter. Just my immune system doesn't love almond butter.
Your body doesn't like it. But yeah, hazelnut butter is great for like, a, you know, a sugar craving. It's almost like Ferrero Rocher, if you will. You can mix it with a bit of cocoa powder, raw cacao powder, and spread that on. We give Stuart, actually, we call it chocolate toast. I think at preschool, they're going to think, what are they feeding him? Because we give him chocolate yogurt, which is unsweetened coconut yogurt with carob powder. And he can have that at night and it's not going to affect his sleep because it doesn't impact you the same way cacao or cocoa powder does. And then on his toast at night, because we've really moved away from any form of sugar as much as possible because he was having some sleep challenges, we'll mix almond butter or peanut butter with some carob powder and put that on his, you know, a slice of gluten-free toast. So that's kind of his little treat with some fruit at night, and it's made a big difference for his sleep.
And that sounds awesome. That sounds so good.
Chocolate toast, chocolate yogurt. Lucky Stewart.
Yeah, for sure, right? Oh, love it. You know, and again, there's that idea of instead of reaching for food, I often like to think, okay, is it just, you know, am I just thirsty? Could I use some more liquid? And so herbal teas can be really great. I'm a big fan of rooibos tea because they do have a little bit more sweetness, especially like a chai rooibos tea. So that can be really great to again sip on to again kind of calm down some of that craving or even kind of interrupt that habit of reaching out for something sweet to eat, but instead, you know, having a drink.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's, yeah, this having a nice cup of tea is good. And we can have the same kind of dopamine hit or feel good effect that we would get from sugar or alcohol by doing something else, as long as we see it as a reward and something pleasurable, right? Mm-hmm. So you can enjoy that cup of tea as much as having chocolate or alcohol. I know it sounds probably impossible, but it is possible, right? So
oh,
you can
sure.
shift your reward center in the brain to see that as a treat too. And one thing that's really helped me, Tony, like I used to snack a bit after dinner. I wouldn't say it was like on a lot of sugar, but definitely like salty, crunchy. But if I brush my teeth and floss my teeth right after dinner, then I don't want to do that again. So I don't eat anything after dinner because I'm like, I'm lazy. I just clean my teeth. I'm not gonna go there.
That's amazing. And because so often when, you know, we're putting Frankie to bed and having her brush her teeth, I avoid brushing my teeth because I want to have a little snack or something else to eat, but I could easily just brush my teeth along with Frankie and then be done with it. Cause I'd be so much like you. I wouldn't want to eat anything and have to brush my teeth again.
I know, as moms, it's just one more thing you have to do, right? And when I was breastfeeding, I was so exhausted. So like just to do it once, there was no way I was going to do it again. So that's a little hack. And then a weird thing too, you can drink something bitter or acidic. That's probably the last thing you want to do when you're craving sugar, but it can really like kind of numb or make those taste buds tingle so that craving can go away. So have a little bit of freshly squeezed lemon or lime in water, a little shot of water with some apple cider vinegar, but give it a try. See if it helps you.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, you were talking about kind of increasing those dopamine centers, but again, you know, it could be watching a funny TV show because laughter will increase your dopamine and have you feel better. Or it could even be your favorite exercise snacks, Lisa, you know, do some jumping jacks or go outside for some fresh air and a walk. And that can not only increase your dopamine, but also increase your energy as well.
Yeah, great tips. So you can get moving, still get that hit, call a friend, watch a funny show, do what's going to feel good for you and make you feel like you're filling up your cup and you're rewarded in a different way.
Yeah, awesome. Now, like, I think we've talked a lot about sugar.
Yes.
And again, we're definitely going to be talking in future episodes more about, you know, sweeteners and you know, this conversation is not going to end at all. Do you think we've covered enough for this
I
episode?
Think so. I'm just looking at the time. Yeah, I think we've probably given people enough to chew on, if you will.
Perfect.
Sorry, really bad joke.
Oh, no, I love it. I love it. So let's switch gears. And Lisa, I know that you're an awesome mom and you must have a super mom moment for this week.
Oh, well, thanks, Tony. You're an awesome mom too. I do make mistakes, but I can think of a super mom moment. I guess it was spawned by, I think, a mom mess up I talked about before with giving Stuart a little bit, you know, too much sugar, even if it was the form of, you know, gluten-free cookies or made good bars before bed. And that was really impacting his sleep. So Pete and I really revamped his bedtime routine. And then we also came up with a strategy because he was starting to get up in the middle of the night and come into our room. He might, you know, once we put him down into his bed, he would get up a few times. He just wasn't, you know, tired. And since we switched from his crib to his bed, he realizes he has freedom and can get out whenever he wants. So we thought, okay, well, we need a strategy and we don't want the reward to be like a treat or food. So we created a sticker chart just with a big piece of paper we have. And we bought some stickers from the dollar store. So every night he stays in his bed, he can get out, we say, to pee or poo. shampoo or if the green light comes on, because he has, you know, a special little clock in his room that the green light goes on when it's time to get out of bed. But if he's getting out for any other reason than pee, poo, the green light, or if he's scared, although lately I think he's pretending to be scared, but so it's only it usually happens maybe once in a while, but you know, we're not going to say you have to stay in bed if you're scared. But he gets a sticker to put on the chart in the morning. So he gets to pick out the sticker, stick it on. And once he has 10 stickers, then he can get a small little toy. So it's not like, it's not perfect. Like there's nights where he still might wake up in the middle of the night, but it's, you know, maybe once in 2 weeks, as opposed to pretty much every night or every other night. He might get up once from his bed and he says, I'm scared of something, but he's not screaming and he's smiling. So, but it seems to be working. So yes, we're bribing him in a way, but our sleep is so sacred. And yeah, if you don't get enough sleep, you're going to crave more sugar too, right? So it's all part of staying healthy and sane.
That's awesome, Lisa. And I love that, again, you're bribing him and rewarding him with something that's not food, and stickers. So that's great.
Yeah, so that's working. But I know, Tony, you're doing a great job. Can you dig deep and find a mama mess up?
Oh yeah, I can dig deep. Like last night, we had a similar mess up to yours that you learned from, Lisa. And unfortunately, I had to learn it the hard way. You know, I was doing some work and Davin was talking about making hot chocolate with the you know, cocoa powder that we have. We have this lovely free trade organic cocoa powder. And so as I was working, I was like, oh yeah, but you know, look for something sugar free or look for something like low sugar. And then, you know, I was took a break and he was having some hot chocolate with Frankie, and I looked at the clock and it was 6 o'clock. And it was like really delicious hot chocolate, but it was super rich. And I was like, okay, he made it with coconut sugar. It'll probably be less sugar, but there's still a ton of caffeine in chocolate. So while Frankie went to bed fine, we were awake from 2:30 until 5 o'clock this morning.
Oh, no.
So yeah.
Oh, that's torture, Tony.
Yeah. Mess up. And I hope we learned from that.
I know. Sometimes we don't. We kind of forget, right, the effects that sugar has on them or what it's going to do. But you can really see it in kids. There's no filter. Like I remember giving Stuart, I think, yeah, it was some form of sugar before we did a Skype call with our in-laws, and he was running back and forth and back and forth within, like, honestly, it felt like minutes. So his blood sugar just poof, peaked right up. So kids are definitely like the litmus test for the negative effects of sugar on our body.
Oh, completely. See it. We definitely see it in Frankie.
Oh, I'm sorry you were awake from 2:30 to 5.
Oh. That's all right. I have my mushroom matcha latte happening, so I'm feeling all right. And I did have the ability to sleep in. And oh, so phew. We did sleep in this morning.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Yeah, because sometimes they'll still wake up early. So at least you got a little extra time, but it's still not the same as having, you know, when you have interrupted sleep, you can feel way off.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. So let's share our mama must-haves for this week, which are definitely related to, you know, what we were talking about with sugar. I'm a big fan of documentaries. And I really find that they can be motivating for me and really enlightening, because you see so many examples of, you know, how, you know, different people live and what they learn. So the documentaries that I would recommend for this week, especially when we're talking about sugar, if you need a little bit of extra motivation to make some changes, there's the documentary Fed Up, which was produced by Katie Couric in the States. And there's also a really great documentary called That Sugar Film. And it was made in Australia. So check out those documentaries. You can, we'll link to them. They each have their own website online, and they have a lot of other resources as well that can be really helpful too.
That sounds great, Tony. I've seen Fed Up, but I haven't heard about That Sugar Film. So I'll definitely check it out. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. It was on Netflix. Hopefully it'll come back again. But again, you can look it up and get it, view it online too.
Okay, great. I love it. And my mama must have. So this is a recipe I share when people are going through a sugar-free detox. And if someone, you know, really loves chocolate, but they want to have a healthier option, we'll share the recipe for a chocolate avocado pudding. So you can just make it at its very basic with just cocoa or raw cacao powder, avocado, a ripe banana or two, blend it up in the food processor. You might add a little bit of sea salt just for some dynamic flavor, and you can enjoy it. You can even freeze it into fudgesicles. You might add a bit of coconut milk too to make it a little bit more creamy. Sometimes people will add a little bit of like stevia or a teeny bit of maple syrup, but I find the banana is sweet enough, and you might too. So give it a try. So we'll link to that recipe. It's really good if you're having sugar cravings but want something healthy. And you can even use carob powder if you're trying not to have too much chocolate, especially late at night.
So yummy. That's awesome, Lisa. And now what we also want to let you know that this sugar-free detox is something that can really help you to, again, make some changes and really kind of guide you through the process. So if you go to our website, perimenopausalmamas.com, you can sign up to be on the wait list for the next sugar-free detox.
Definitely check it out. So we'll be doing another one soon. So get on the list and you'll be the first to know about it. It's a 5-day sober sugar-free reset challenge. You'll be armed with, you know, recipes, ways to cut out sugar, things to do when you're craving sugar. We've gotten really good feedback on it. So especially this time of the year, and even in the new year, we'll be offering it again too. So just go to our website, get on the wait list, and you'll hear the next one will be offered.
So thanks so much for joining us today. Again, you can connect with us on our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. That's where you'll find all of our past episodes and our show notes. You can also connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And that really allows other women out there to find us as well. And you can also tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too.
Definitely. Well, have a great week, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.
Stay safe and healthy, everyone. Bye-bye.
Stay safe. Bye-bye.